Husker Doc Talk podcast is presented by the Remington Trophy. The award is given annually to the nation's top center. Now in its 21st year, the Remington Trophy winner will be announced on the ESPN College Football Awards show in December. He will be honored at the Remington Trophy Celebration Dinner, Saturday, January 18th, 2020, at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. You should follow the Remington Trophy on Facebook. There are weekly introductions to players on the Remington Trophy watch list, like Cesar Ruiz from Michigan.
It's a lot harder than people think. People don't really understand what goes into it, but it's definitely, I believe, one of the most important positions on the entire field.
The Remington Trophy celebration benefits the Boomer Esiason Foundation and the fight against cystic fibrosis. For more information, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. The beer we drink on this podcast is provided by the Infusion Brewing Company. Get to the Benson location this Friday, October 4th. It's Infusion Brewing's 6th anniversary. To celebrate, they will be tapping their Mexican lager that day. Why Mexican lager? Well, October 4th is also National Taco Day. Burrito Envy, which is right next door, will be on hand serving tacos that go with that great beer. Visit their website, infusionbrewing.com. A little later in this podcast, you will hear Ticket Talk with Ticket Express. You should be over the Ohio State hangover by now. And the Northwestern game always proves to be a good one. Whether you are buying or selling, Ticket Express is your first and only stop. TicketExpress.com. You know, the weather is going to start changing pretty soon. Are you prepared for game day when it's colder outside? Let Husker Hounds get you bundled up. Fall and winter fashions arriving daily. Three locations in Omaha or online at HuskerHounds.com. Husker Max distributes this podcast. Husker Max is the number one website for the latest Husker news. You get fresh links, original content, message boards, so much more. HuskerMax.com. And be sure to check out David Max's latest creation. It's FootballPedia.com. If you need football information, you can find it at FootballPedia.com with over 1 million pages of content. Dr. Rob and I are reminded daily, and we are also humbled by how many people actually listen to this podcast, because it's just really two guys getting together, drink beer, and talk football. Who doesn't want to do that? It is a reminder that you can always send us a question by email, doctalksports@gmail.com, doctalksports@gmail.com. Also, follow Dr. Rob on Twitter, @DocTalkSports. No matter where you find us, whether it's Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, make sure to take time to give us a like. And if you're feeling extra generous, throw in a written review, because the more you're talking about us, the more people will find us. This is the Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy, 2019, episode 16. Dr. Rob, if there was ever a time we needed Infusion Brewing Company beer, this would be the podcast. 48-7, Ohio State beats Nebraska. Here's to you. It's a fall-like beer. It's the Vanilla Bean Pumpkin Ale.
We had to do it at some point. You knew it was coming. They wanted us to try it. We knew it was coming.
You're not a big pumpkin beer fan, are you?
You know, because there's a lot of beers that, I mean, like there's like lambics and some of these other like fruit infused and fruit
flavored. That's not bad, though.
It's nowhere near as pumpkin-y as I thought it was going to be. Because you were there last week and the guy said it's really pumpkin-y.
He actually said that they were thinking about adding more pumpkin.
No, don't do that.
I'm kind of with you. This probably tastes more like vanilla bean than it does a pumpkin vanilla bean, but there's just a hint of pumpkin where you're like, okay, I can handle that.
This might be, I know I'm a little biased here because, well, they sponsor us. This is probably about the only pumpkin ale I will ever drink, because I've tried a few of them.
Yeah.
Because they always come out this time of year. I mean, it's like pumpkin spice for men. It's the pumpkin ales.
The pumpkin spice lattes that you get at Starbucks.
Yeah, this is like pumpkin ales are like the male version of that. And I'm just like, God, those things are just god awful. This is a vanilla bean. It's their vanilla bean.
Yes. What it is, so it's vanilla bean infused with the pumpkin, which is a good fall drink. Again,
there's
pumpkin,
only a little bit. There is not much pumpkin there.
I think it's very if you want a heavy pumpkin taste, this probably isn't for you. If you want a lighter pumpkin taste, And the funny thing
this
is...
This is maybe the only pumpkin ale I will willingly drink admit to drinking.
I'm actually thinking, because I don't drink the vanilla bean on a regular basis. It's not my favorite of theirs.
You know, I don't know if it is either, but I like it.
But I think this little hint of pumpkin, I like it better with the pumpkin than maybe without it. Again, we're just being honest.
Let me get a glass or two in, and I'll let you know, because well, you know I'm going to need a couple glasses.
That's the great thing about beer is there's so many different beers. Everybody has a different palate. There's no way you could like every single beer that somebody made.
Oh,
right?
and people like different
types.
I mean, you and I both like sours. Mm-hmm. We're big fans of sours. I like ales a lot, so I'm a big fan of your ales. This isn't bad, though.
No, not bad at all.
Again, it's basically, if you've had their vanilla bean and you like it, you'll like this.
Yes, you very much will. And coming up this Friday, they're actually celebrating their 6th anniversary, and they're going to be tapping a Mexican lager. We'll probably have that next week.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Yeah, so October 4th is actually National Taco Day. And so they're tapping the Mexican lager on October 4th, and then Burrito Envy, which is right next door to them in Benson, going to be there serving tacos. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty awesome.
That's genius.
It is. So we have avoided talking about the football game to this point.
Do we have to?
Well, you know, it
yeah,
was,
we probably
have to. You probably have to. But again, you're not going to win football games if you continue to turn the football over.
Well, okay, let's make a couple of things clear here. We could have not turned the ball over at all, and I'm pretty sure we still would have lost that game.
Was it? You know, I was driving home, so I was doing my sound off show in Des Moines. And I was driving home. I listened to the game on the radio on my way back, and so I didn't get to see a lot of the game firsthand. I got to watch a half hour of it in the studio. So, but that wasn't very much. Just athletically, talent-wise, that big of a gap?
There is a gap. I mean, it's impressive. You know, a few things that I think I should probably touch off right off the bat, because I remember after the Colorado game, everybody was like, "Oh, we need to get the razor blades out. It's over." Couple things to keep in mind. One, it's not like this is a completely different Nebraska team than what played Colorado 3 weeks ago. This is the same Nebraska team that had essentially kind of a second half, fourth quarter meltdown against Colorado. And they're not great. They're an okay team. And that's about the best you can say about them. Guess what? That's Nebraska. They're an okay team. That's about the best you can say about them right now. I think there's a lot of people who are crushed because there are these expectations. There are these predictions that Martinez is going to be top five Heisman vote getter. Nebraska is going to win the West. And I'm going back to what things that I heard from people within the program a couple of years ago, where they're saying, hey, this is going to be a 2 or 3 year process. And I'm not saying, oh yeah, by year two or year three, I'm saying you got to get through a couple of years. You got to get through 3 years before you see a difference. We're less than halfway through year two. And so there's still a lot of ground that Nebraska has to make up. But Ohio State, when you ask how good are they, that is a very talented team. And that is a well-developed team in all aspects. And if you want to look at it from a program stability standpoint, think over the last 30 years. I mean, they had John Cooper for over a decade, who was basically a nine. He was Tom Osborne without the national titles. He was 9.5, 10 wins a year, kept losing to Michigan, so they fired him and hired Jim Tressel. Jim Tressel was a national title and Big Ten conference title winning coach all over the place, which in hindsight, it's one of those things you think about that he got fired for kind of sort of covering up the whole tattoos for bowl game gear scandal there, which I don't even know if that's an actual NCAA violation anymore. And he essentially got fired for it. But you went through an incredibly stable program under John Cooper. You went through an incredibly stable and successful program under Jim Tressel. You went through this incredibly successful phase again, another national title, a lot more Big Ten titles, a lot more wins over Michigan with Urban Meyer. And now you've got Ryan Day there. It's not like these guys went through the Bill Callahan, Bo Pelini, Mike Riley era. The last time Ohio State had a down period coaching-wise, you know, Earl Bruce, maybe, and even then it wasn't that bad.
I was going to say, Earl Bruce, it wasn't that bad. Now, he coached, I think, Northern Iowa after that, but I think it was just one of those times where he was ready for a change because he replaced – did he replace Woody Hayes?
No, there was – yeah.
Was there one in between?
Yeah, you had somebody in between there. But, I mean, Earl – That was their worst time period, and that was kind of a – they were okay. But it's – that is an incredibly stable program. Ryan Day did not have to take over and revamp anything. Now, here's the scary thing.
I do want to correct you. Earl Bruce did replace Woody Hayes.
Oh, did he? Okay.
Yeah, so Woody Hayes went from 1951 to 1978. Earl Bruce – now, think about this. You're saying that was a down period. Earl Bruce won 77% of his games.
Nobody thinks of him as legendary Ohio State coach, though.
John Cooper won 69% of his games. Okay. He went from 88 to 2000. Jim Tressel won 80% of his games.
That's an impressive stat.
Urban Meyer won 93% of his games.
That's an insane stat.
And Ryan Day so far has won.
He's 100%.
Yeah, he's 100%.
The thing that really scared me going into this game. So I'm driving my kids around to sports all Saturday morning. I'm listening to Game Day on ESPN Radio. And they're talking about Ryan Day and his coaching staff. And I think the words they use, they said it's actually in terms of the people who really cover Ohio State, the beat writers, the reporters they talk to, the guys who are at practice day in and day out, really keeping a close eye on Ohio State, said that in their opinion, Ryan Day and his coaching staff are an upgrade over Urban and his staff.
Why is that?
The biggest thing they said is that better defensive coaching. They said they're using the talent far better than it was used for the better part of the time Urban was in Columbus. Which, I mean, that's scary when you're thinking about what Ohio State did under Urban Meyer. And most of the people who observe that program closely are saying the defensive coaching staff is a big upgrade over what they had going on under Urban.
I mean, look at, they had Rob Ash, who left to be the head coach at Rutgers, was fired this week. And then you had Greg Schiano, who's known as a defensive guy, under Urban Meyer.
Yeah, Fickle.
And Luke Fickle, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they said this is the best they've looked defensively since Urban hit the door there. And this was before the game. I mean, this is like 10 a.m. I'm listening to this. And as soon as I heard that, I'm thinking, boy, this just does not sound good. But that's a program that was hitting on all cylinders already. And you bring Ryan Day and a coaching staff upgrade in, at least on the defensive side of the ball. It's not like they're going to lose a beat. They're going to be even better. But I mean, from a talent standpoint, they were bigger across. I mean, they looked huge. Their offensive line dwarfed our defensive line. That Chase Young, that guy's a monster. Kid was essentially unblockable Saturday night. It's as a measuring stick game, it's a good one. That's how far behind we are. Now, big picture-wise, I mean, everybody's sitting here going like, oh, my God, there's got to be at least a little bit of a silver lining to the cloud here. And I guess what I'd say is in that regard is, one, you're not going to – I know fans are tired of people saying have patience. But, God, from as bad as we were, you need to have a little bit of patience. And when I still look at the schedule, again, all of these could go another way. But when I look at the schedule, I think we beat Minnesota. I think we beat Purdue. I think we beat Maryland. I don't want to say anything about Northwestern because Lord knows what the hell happens when Nebraska plays Northwestern. But I think Nebraska gets those three, and I think they get one other win in there, and that's seven wins. I think Nebraska's got a shot. At that point, you go to a bowl game, and I think Nebraska has a shot at finishing the year 7-6, 8-5. And if they do that, in my mind, that's not a bad year, especially when you look at where they were last year, finishing 8-4. So if Nebraska finishes with 7 or 8 wins this year, in my mind, and I think in most people's minds, you ought to be able to look at that and say, hey, these guys made a step forward. There was improvement. I still think there's massive holes, and it's things we've talked about already on the podcast in terms of having a deep ball vertical threat. That still is a massive, massive deficit for our offense. The Adrian Martinez thing, I'm still trying to figure that out. I know Scott Frost made, in his press conference today, made note of the fact that there's a lot of factors that are playing into how he's playing. But I still think he's a different player than he was last year. And I'm having trouble putting my finger on what it is. I don't know if it's kind of like what Mitch Sherman was saying, where he's so ingrained with the coaching over the offseason to go through all of his reads that he's doing a first, second, third, fourth read before he thinks about taking off and running. I don't know. Something's different about him, and I haven't figured that out yet.
We are getting a lot of questions, and we'll come up when we do the question and answer section a little bit later in the podcast. But I'll bring it up right now with Adrian Martinez, and that is, there are a lot of people think, well, hold on. He's gone through a year of weight training and conditioning. He's put on some weight and maybe that muscle mass. Does that have an effect of it?
No, because I think the thing that's bothering me when I watch him, it isn't, say, like a throwing motion thing or an accuracy with the ball type issue, which I know when you have three picks, it's easy to say that. For me, it's a decision-making thing. I mean, go through a couple of progressions and take off running, but that's also a coaching staff thing as well, too. They maybe tell him, hey, we want you to go through all of those progressions. I don't think it fits the system, and I don't think it fits his skill set to do so. I think he's a guy who, you know what, first read, second read, run. Get 4 yards, 5 yards, 6 yards, and all of a sudden the defense has to really, really key on you, and it frees other things up.
So you would like to see him maybe improvise more?
Yeah, I think if he's right now currently going through where he's going through a progression where he's looking at 3, maybe 4 receivers in a progression, go through 2 and then run. Figure out a way to make yards with your feet. Because, again, you get 5 or 6 yards, that's a hell of a lot better situation than you're going to be in otherwise. And, again, it puts pressure on a defense.
Is it fair to compare Martinez with Fields, both sophomores?
No, I think – well, and I say no, and part of the reason I say no, it's multiple reasons here. One – Fields is really good. Don't get me wrong. 2, he's got 2 NFL running backs. Now, I'm not saying Wandale and Mo Washington aren't NFL guys at some point, but those guys are going to play in the NFL. Those are really big, really strong, incredibly fast running backs. Those are Calvin Jones, Lawrence Phillips type guys back there. Is what they've got in that backfield. They've got some great wide receivers. They have an offensive line that is head and shoulders above anybody on Nebraska's roster right now.
On the roster?
On the roster.
So if Nebraska and Ohio State played 10 times this year,
Ohio State wins 8 or 9.
So you actually think Nebraska could have a chance against him and at least one?
So you're saying there's
you're
a
saying
chance.
There's a chance.
Yeah, there's always a chance. What I'm saying is that Ohio State's offensive line is head and shoulders above what we've got in Lincoln right now. And I don't say that to insult the guys in Lincoln, but at the same time,
you have to be realistic, right?
You got to be realistic, and part of that realism, and I've tried touching on this. I think the hardest position group to upgrade quickly is the offensive line. It's not like you get this stud freshman out of high school who's going to be a world beater at left guard, and all of a sudden the entire complexion of the offensive line changes and they're just crushing people left and right. You got to have 5, 6, 7 guys who are all really, really good, really, really big, really, really athletic. And we've got 5 guys on that line who are, they're still a little bit of a work in progress. Hymus is a guy that has not faced enough elite competition to know how to block against it. He also needs to get a little heavier, and he needs to get a lot stronger. Trent Hixon needs to get bigger. He needs to get a lot stronger, and he just needs to learn how to play that position a little bit better. Cam Jurgens, he needs to get his snaps consistent. He needs to put them in the same place every time, and he needs to get better at that. But he also needs to get bigger. He also needs to get stronger. He also needs to learn nuances of playing the center position. I get it. He's a redshirt freshman converted from tight end. That's still an okay excuse. I mean, I'm saying that's a legit excuse for him. I'm just telling him what he needs to do. Bo Wilson. I think Bo Wilson needs to get bigger and stronger. I think Matt Farniok needs to get a little bit. I think he actually needs to slim down a little bit and get stronger. I think he needs to lose 10 pounds of body fat and put on 15 pounds of muscle.
So let's.
I think Farniok also needs to learn how to play against really, truly elite competition. The only time prior to this game that I think those two offensive tackles, in my opinion, played against true elite competition was last year against Iowa. And I don't know if they're going to play anybody remotely as good as Chase Young until they go against Epinesa. I'm looking at the rest of these games, and I don't know if anybody's got anybody of the caliber of Chase Young or Epinesa.
And Epinesa hasn't dominated, but he's been double-teamed a lot. And so, I mean, Iowa's defensive line hasn't done a lot what I think people thought they could do. But help put this in perspective for a lot of people, because you've been to most of the games at Nebraska over the last 10 years. This is the Ohio State team you saw on Saturday is the best team to play Nebraska since when? I know I'm throwing that on you. You didn't prepare for it.
No, I'd have to. You know, if you kind of pulled up rosters here.
But just from pure watching it, you went, damn. I mean, this is the first time in a long time you went, damn.
In terms of across the board talent, coaching, preparation, physical development, because it's easy to say, like, what it's most of these guys were on the team, Ohio State's team last year. Yeah, a little bit of a different system offensively. You got Dwayne Haskins, they were playing more of a pro-style passing offense. I mean, that was like watching the New York Giants with Eli Manning. I mean, it's Dwayne Haskins, drop back. I mean, he ran a couple of times, but it's Dwayne Haskins is a 6'4", 245-pound quarterback. He's not going to take off and race a safety to the end zone. So it was just a little bit of a different style last year. And I think the style that they're playing with this year makes better use of their talent. And that's kind of a key thing. I mean, if you're asking Joe Daly to be a drop back passing quarterback, it's just not going to work really well. If you're asking Adrian Martinez to do that, I don't think that plays to his skill set either. Yeah, the kid can throw, but I think he's better when it's a hurry up offense and that run pass option is in his back pocket. So
you're thinking about it.
I am, and I'm having trouble coming up with Ohio State in 2017. Nebraska was horrible that year, but that was a pretty good Ohio State team. 2016 Ohio State was really good as well, too. I thought Michigan last year, from a talent standpoint on defense, was unbelievable. Now, they lost a bunch of those guys to the NFL draft, and it's shown this year in Michigan's, well, at least in that was actually, Ellen, Michigan's first three games, that game against Rutgers was much-needed medicine for the Wolverines, but Michigan's first three games this year, you could tell there was a big drop-off in their defensive productivity, but last year's Michigan defense was really, really good. But I'd say 2017 and 2016 Ohio State were probably close to this. I think this team was a step above them.
And I think that's why Sam McEwen from the Omaha World Herald voted Ohio State number one in his Associated Press college football poll, because they just dominated that easy. And it is, you do got to have some style points, right? I mean, with the college football playoff now, you got to run it up.
I think
Ohio State impressed a lot of people. So I'm going to ask you this now. Nebraska is closest to matching up with Ohio State. Where is the closest where they matched up, and where is the biggest gap? I'm taking offensive line as the biggest gap.
I mean, now, are you talking like where does – like
just what position group is Nebraska close to being equal with Ohio State?
Okay.
And what position group are they just so far behind they've got a long ways to go to be at that elite level?
I would probably say closest running back quarterback. I think Dobbins and Major Teague are definite NFL guys. We've got some legitimate talent at those positions. They're hamstringed by the lack of a passing game and an offensive line that's going to be a work in progress for another year or two. So I think that's maybe where we're closest. I think in terms of where we're farthest away, I would probably say offensive line and then defensive backfield. When you looked at Ohio State's corners and safeties, that was like small linebackers with sprinter speed. I mean, those were big cornerbacks. I mean, all of our wide receivers looked like high school kids lining up against them. Those were big, big cornerbacks and safeties, and they could run. I mean, it was a scary game to watch because their guys were consistently open. And you were looking at our guys struggling, doing everything they could to close the distance. And they just couldn't do it. And then you look at the Ohio State guys, and it's not effortless. There was a lot of work put in by those guys, to get to where they are and to put that kind of performance out on the field. But that being said, God, they just made it look easy. I mean, they'd take three steps, and their wide receivers would have a gap between themselves and our defensive backs and our linebackers.
So now Nebraska switches gears and will now get ready for Northwestern. Northwestern went on the road last week and lost at Wisconsin 24-15. A couple notes on this game, though.
That was a close game. I watched a good chunk.
So Northwestern had 21 first downs compared to Wisconsin's 13. It outgained Wisconsin in a defensive battle, 255 total yards to 243. And that's saying a lot. But the big number here is they turned the ball over three times, and turnovers will kill you, as Nebraska's learned even the last two games.
And turnovers kill. If you watch that game, turnovers is – Northwestern had them. They had Wisconsin on the ropes. Turnovers killed them.
Had them on the ropes at Camp Randall. So Northwestern has lost to number 25 Stanford at the time, 17-7. It beat UNLV. But it's then lost to Michigan State, who's a top 25 team, 31-10, and it's lost to Wisconsin, who's a top 10 team, 24-15. The record at 1-3 is a bit deceiving.
There's a lot of – I love the term smoke and mirrors. You hear me say that a lot. But, yeah, that's a smoke and mirrors 1-3. They're a pretty darn good football team. For a team that a lot of people thought this year was still going to be really a rebuilding year, this was one of those Northwestern teams that starts off the year – with a crap record, and all of a sudden at the end of the season, they're sitting there at 8-4, and you're wondering how the hell they got there.
Well, I'm going to skip ahead to one question. We're going to have question and answer coming up later on, because we got tons of questions that came in right after the Ohio State game. But John in South Carolina says, I'm still trying to wrap my head around how the Big Ten develops their schedules. Somehow playing Ohio State 6 years in a row, combined with getting Wisconsin, Iowa, and Northwestern, either all home or away each year, makes little or no sense to me. But if you want to talk about schedules, John, check this out. Northwestern is going from Michigan State to Wisconsin to Nebraska to Ohio State to Iowa.
That's brutal.
That's just mean, isn't it? Now, they're not. I mean, so they played Michigan State at home. They went to Wisconsin, going to Nebraska. Then they get Ohio State and Iowa at home. But
that's a huge trap game. That's for a Ohio
brutal
State,
schedule.
It is. That is a nasty, nasty schedule.
I wish I could tell you I understood how the Big Ten goes about its scheduling. To me, it doesn't make sense in a lot of cases. But if you think Nebraska's got a brutal schedule, there's a lot of teams out there with brutal schedules.
Yeah, that's a tough one, right?
Yeah.
Well, look at Texas A&M this year. I mean, they're sitting at what I think like going into this week, and they narrowly snuck by Arkansas. But they went into that Arkansas game 2-2. And the voters still had them as a top 25 team because their schedule was so brutal. The fact that they were 2-2 is actually kind of impressive.
So you watched the Northwestern game. Is this going to be a closer game than you think? Is this should be a win for Nebraska? How do you view Northwestern against Nebraska?
I think it's going to be like Iowa. They're going to lean against us, try and wear us down a little bit, and basically wait for us to screw something up, which we are. It's just a question of can we overcome it against these guys. I mean, this is a much better team than, say, Illinois. You're not going to turn the ball over. What did we have, 3 or 4 turnovers against Illinois? I mean, same as Ohio State. I thought it was 4. But you're not, either way, you're not going to turn the ball over against Northwestern 3 or 4 times and pull it out like you did against Illinois. That's just not going to happen with these guys. They will beat you because that's how they do it. The offensive productivity was okay. So 4 turnovers against Illinois. If they have 4 turnovers against Northwestern, Nebraska loses that game. Defensively, I thought Northwestern was pretty impressive. Biggest thing was their run defense. They played Wisconsin's run defense really well. Or they played run defense against Wisconsin very well. Wisconsin just couldn't get anything going consistently against them. And that I think that really hurt them.
But I think that surprised me, right? For how dominant Wisconsin had been.
And again, maybe this was a little bit of a letdown game for the Badgers. You come off that monster win against Michigan a week or so back, and sometimes maybe that can kind of hamper how you do that following week. I think Wisconsin is still by far and away the much better team. But there's reasons that Northwestern was well prepared. Northwestern got a couple of turnovers against Wisconsin, and that helped keep them in the game as well, too. I mean, the turnovers weren't completely one-sided, but yeah, I agree. Northwestern got completely hosed on the schedule here. So they're going to be a very solid team. Don't let their record fool you. It's more a product of their schedule than it is anything.
Don't forget you can follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. Again, that's twitter.com / Doc Talk Sports. Or if you're already on Twitter and you want to tag him, you can feel free to do so at Doc Talk Sports. And we always take your questions. We may not get to everyone on the podcast, but we do look at them. And if they seem to be pertinent for the podcast, we have no problem bringing them to light. And you can email Dr. Rob, doctalksports@gmail.com. That's doctalksports@gmail.com. Visiting again this week with Jessica Friedman from Ticket Express. And I got to ask you, Jessica, is there somewhat of a hangover after a game like Ohio State?
Oh, absolutely there is. And there's a bit of a recovery because a game like that does bruise a person and a good Husker fan. But at the same time, we're starting to see some rebounders out there that are coming around and want to come out and support the boys for the Northwestern game this Saturday.
We'll get to Northwestern in a bit. I got to ask you, because you are a friendly voice that people are going to hear on the phone when they call sometimes. And how did you end up at Ticket Express? I'm always curious, how did you end up working at Ticket Express?
That's a good story. I had left somewhere else where I was dealing with ticketing and sales. And oddly enough, I ended up at Ticket Express because I knew Chad, and I called him when his Twitter account got hacked. And he said, let me figure that out. And he called me back and he said, what are you doing? I'd love to have you come on and do our social media. And now I do our marketing and our operations, and kind of run the show.
So you were looking out for him with Twitter, you saved him, and yeah. You continue to save him.
Absolutely. That's a good way to put it, Trav.
All right. So Northwestern, you get another home game. You mentioned the hangover, but people are bouncing back. How do you get psyched up, or how do people get motivated to go, you know what, this is a game I want to go to, even though Nebraska just gave up 48 points last week?
I think you've got the people that throw their hands up in the air and the doomsdayers, but you've still got those that ultimately want to support their team. They genuinely bleed red. And I understand that because I bleed green the way some of these Husker fans bleed red. And they want to show up because at the end of the day, they're kids out on the field. Those are college kids and they have a lot of work to do, sure. But they do deserve the support of the fans. And at some point, it does have to turn around.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. You should never mention another team on this podcast, as I've learned through several emails over the last couple of weeks, that if you mention any other team, you are just absolutely the worst human being on the face of the earth. You are not. I just happen to be one of those really bad human beings. Always remember, when you go to TicketExpress.com, you buy your tickets, and the price you see on the website is the price you pay. No hidden fees. So what are you waiting for? Now's a good time. After the expensive tickets last week, you can get some pretty good deals for Northwestern. Go to TicketExpress.com. That's TicketExpress.com. All right, I mentioned the Gmail account where we take questions. Are you ready for some questions, Dr. Rob?
Let's do the official questions.
They're coming. You know, it's funny. I was looking at the podcast statistics the other day, and I mean, we have listeners from all over the world. When we put out last week's podcast, it was the largest 2-day listenership that we've had since the podcast launched. And I think a lot of it had to do with all the religious talk that we were doing. We made a lot of people happy with our religious talk again.
It was definitely the aliens,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, the aliens, it might be. It might be the aliens. Should we get into, do you think the world is flat or round? Should we get into that?
Oh, my God.
Do you believe the world is like, what, 2 million years old? Or what
I do not believe the world is flat. Quite sure it's round.
Are you sure? Are you sure?
Yeah. Oh, what was the best one?
Was the world created in 7 days?
Well, maybe it was 7 days to God.
That's fair. Brian in Richmond, Virginia. We're going all the way out to Richmond, Virginia. My main question is, knowing what we know at this second that we would get blown out, is hosting game day good or bad for current players recruiting future of the program overall? Basically, can embarrassment ever be spurned into a positive, i.e. national exposure?
Yeah, it's always good. Yeah, you always take that exposure. Because here's the thing. There's recruits who don't give a rat's ass about the win or loss. And the argument, and this is one you ask anybody about this, that's the opportunity to tell the recruit, hey, you're the missing puzzle piece. You're what we need to get over the hump. You're going to come here. Look at this. We need you. We got to have you here to make a difference. You're going to get out there. You're going to play right away because we've got this talent gap and you're the guy to fill it. Recruits, I mean, that says a lot to a player. I'd be the first to admit, I remember looking at the old Big 8 Conference preview magazines and you're looking at the record from the year before. You're looking at the guys on the roster and you're thinking to yourself, I can do better than this. That makes a difference. So the more exposure you get, the better. And if a recruit can sit there and go like, oh my God, these guys are in game day. There's a lot of people who are going to forget that loss pretty quickly, but they're going to remember Nebraska was on game day.
Well, here's what they're going to remember. All the people that were up there surrounding game day, they're going to remember Gabrielle Union goes to every single Nebraska home game, and she's super hot.
And brings Dwayne Wade.
And brings Dwayne Wade, who had the line of game day, by the way. So she's walking out of the bus, and Maria Taylor, who's also a very good reporter, also super hot, goes to Gabrielle Union. Hey, I know you're born in Omaha, but when did you become a Husker fan? Gabrielle Union goes, at birth. When else? At birth. So she goes to Dwayne Wade. Dwayne, when did you become a Husker fan? He goes, it's part of the prenup. I thought that was a good line.
That's pretty damn
That's a pretty
funny.
Good line. Also, two things at game day that caught my attention. I didn't understand the constant chanting of Iowa sucks because, to me, that gave legitimacy to the rivalry. It really did. It means that Iowa's under your skin.
I never deny that.
Second thing I loved the most about game day was my favorite sign of the day. Ryan Day works for the Des Moines Register. Now, if anybody's been following this Carson King story over in the state of Iowa, he's like the only guy who's like thumbed his nose at the cancel culture and got away with like racist tweets from his 16-year-old. But
okay, he didn't even okay.
It was from Tosh.0, by the way, too.
Yeah, he didn't make racist tweets. He retweeted jokes from Tosh.0.
Yes.
That were racist.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's one of those. Yeah, he retweeted jokes that some other comedian made, and that a-hole from the Des Moines Register.
Who's been fired, by the way.
Well, you know what? I mean, it's don't throw stones in glass houses.
Well, first of all.
Which, if you looked at that guy's older tweets, and some of them, by the way, everybody's like, oh, well, the reporter made mistakes far in the past. Okay. Some of those offensive tweets were not that far in the past.
Again, I don't get offensive. I don't get offended by anything. I really don't. Nothing really offends me. I don't know why.
I am aware.
And you can back that up. I'm not a bad person, though, am I? You like me. We hang out together. I mean, our families do stuff together.
Yeah. Actually, I think you're a great person.
I just don't get offended at things. I'm like, okay, whatever. That's to each his own. I'm not one to judge. But the Ryan Day works for the Des Moines Register sign.
That's pretty funny.
That was pretty good. That was really good. All right, Mark has a couple questions. He says, is it time for Frost to get tougher on the team, benching, etc.? And he's got one more. Where's the leadership? Players holding each other accountable, demanding better. With player leadership, does this debacle even take place?
Yes, the debacle still takes place because that talent gap is impressive. You know, the leadership question, that's a good question because last year when you look at these two teams and you look at how they played, how they fought, there's a lot of people commenting on like, I almost think they were better last year. I mean, you hear that a lot. That gets whispered quite a bit. Even you and I have asked that question on the podcast.
Better in the last six games of last year.
Yeah, but there was a lot of games earlier in the year. Because if you looked at last year, there was a lot of games last year where when you looked at the stats, you went, oh my God, we just destroyed that team. It was like, we saw a lot of games like the Illinois game, except Nebraska lost them last year, where Nebraska just utterly destroyed a team on the field, but just enough penalties and turnovers killed them. This year, I don't know if we've seen that quite yet. And we saw it early on last year. So I think it's a legitimate question, but I think part of the reason there's the appearance of that, there was a lot of seniors on last year's team. You had a lot of upperclassmen that held sway, especially on offense. I mean, you had a couple of the offensive linemen that were seniors. I mean, a Zigbo at running back, Stanley Morgan. You had some really good ball players. You had that were seniors. You had some guys that were incredibly well seasoned, provided a ton of leadership on that team last year. And defense as well too. I mean, you saw them on both sides of the ball. That there's a lot of these guys who stepped up and said, "Hey, we're going to buy in. We may not know how to do it. We may not know the system. We've only had half a year under Frost as a coach, but you know what? We're going to buy in and we're going to try and help turn this ship around." And that really showed. And when you look at this year's team, now you've got some seniors on the D line. You got Mo Berry in the middle at linebacker, but God, it falls off quick after that. And this is primarily a team of freshmen, sophomores, and a handful of juniors. And you lose that leadership a little bit. You lose that maturity. I mean, I would take a team of on both sides. I would take 22 Mo Berries, but we don't have that. We got one, and the guy's trying his best to hold that defense together. And there's only so much one guy in a leadership position can do, but we don't have much of that on the offensive side at all.
I can't remember if you and I have had this conversation or not. I know it came up on my radio show. can you coach or teach leadership? Now, I know there are leadership.
You can develop it, but you either got it or you don't.
Okay, thank you. You and I fall in the same line of that because, you know, I know you can go to, I know business people send their people to leadership classes and all this stuff. You may be able to hone some skills, but I believe leadership is just something that comes naturally to some people.
I agree. And when you talk about that from a honing skill standpoint, I mean, I can take a bunch of cooking classes and get pretty damn good in the kitchen. But guess what? I'm never going to have a 5-star Michelin rated restaurant. I mean, it's just, some guys have it, some guys don't. I don't. But it's the same thing from a leadership standpoint. Some people are just kind of have that knack, have that ability. And the better ones tend to be more mature people, people who've been around for a while. And I'm not saying they don't have leaders. I think a guy like Martinez has some very good leadership ability, but there's a difference between a kid who's a freshman, sophomore with a lot of leadership ability and a guy who's a fifth-year senior with a lot of leadership ability.
And I think we have to be able to decipher the type of leadership we're talking about, too. There are guys who are rah-rah leaders who may not be the greatest, but they're good at rallying the troops. But there are other leaders who just flat-out lead by example, and you're going to get behind that guy because you know that he's somebody to follow. Am I wrong there? Am I correct?
No, I mean, there's a lot of overlap between those guys. But I think ultimately the thing is that I think they lack kind of that guy that they're going to rally around and say, okay, this is the guy who's going to keep us pointed in the right direction, who's going to battle to the bitter end. Now, I thought Nebraska actually did an okay job of fighting to the bitter end in that game on Saturday. It's just, again, it was a moot point. It was a lost cause from the get-go.
Do you think Scott Frost should bench somebody? Odd silence.
I would be interested to see what would happen if he decided to say, hey, we're at least for a couple of series going to try Noah Vedral and see what happens. Or you know what? We got 4 games in which to use him. We're going to go with Luke McCaffrey for a few series here and just see how he does. Let's put a little pressure on Martinez. I'm curious to see how he responds to that because, quite frankly, I think he'd respond very well to it.
That's interesting.
But, I mean, I have been benched in my football career before. It has happened.
Did it motivate you?
Oh, hell yeah. I did not like it. Although, you know, I remember situations where I would just, I mean, it wasn't even a benching. I'd get beat out, and that freaking getting beat out motivated me to work even harder.
OJ has 4 questions. I mean, people were detailed this week. I mean, they were fired up.
Okay, well, give me the first one. Let me answer it quickly, okay. And we'll just try and rip through these.
Why did Ohio State get so much better in the last year compared to Nebraska?
I think last year's game in Lincoln was a little bit of a perfect storm in terms of Ohio State not quite being ready for what Nebraska threw at them. I think I think Nebraska had added dimensions on offense, i.e. Stanley Morgan, a vertical passing game, and a stronger running back contingent in terms of having a guy like Divine Azigbo. And Nebraska got a little bit lucky. They picked up some turnovers. They caught Ohio State off guard. The other thing goes back to what I said earlier. I'm not joking. I agree. After watching them play, I think this is a better run, better coached defense than what Ohio State ever had under Urban Meyer. So there was a coaching staff upgrade. The talent's always been there. And last season was a little bit of an aberration. That I think everybody wanted to look at that game and say, yes, this is where Nebraska is now. No, that Ohio State game last year, that was our high watermark last year where we had the perfect storm of everything coming together when it needed to. So Ohio State was really good last year, too.
OJ's second question. Does Frost's scheme have too much for Martinez? Is that why he seems out of sorts more this year?
It's hard to define too much, but I mean, when we had Mitch Sherman here on the air with us, and he said, hey, they've kind of got this guy ingrained to go through all these reads and progressions. If you meet it in that sense, yeah, again, I keep going back to the whole, dude, first read, second read, fucking run. That's what he ought to be doing. I truly think that if you've got a guy, if you've got a true run pass option quarterback, a true dual threat quarterback, if you're not letting them use that dual threat ability on a consistent basis, guess what? That's no longer a dual threat quarterback. You've turned the guy into a pocket passer, and that's working against his strengths.
Why did Nebraska's offensive and defensive lines have just a hard time on Saturday?
Talent.
That was pretty easy. And that leads us into the fourth question,
which is, you know what? One thing I should probably add here. There's an experience thing in terms of facing that kind of talent where when you face it once or twice, you can look really, really bad that first or second time you face it. There's a pure experience thing in there in terms of just facing talent like that and knowing how to perform against that. And sometimes it takes a couple of tries to do that. I think if Nebraska plays Ohio State a couple of times, there's a degree of steel sharpens steel. And after you face Chase Young a few times, he's not going to get past you as easily as he did the first couple.
Now, and this leads into OJ's fourth and final question, is Nebraska's talent pool that bad?
It's a combination of talent that was not that great. And I know there's a lot of people saying, hey, it's a year and a half later. You can't blame Mike Riley anymore. Yes, you can. Big recruiting deficits take a few years to overcome. You don't overcome those in a year or two. So, yeah, our talent pool was completely depleted. We had the occasional really good ball player on the team. I mean, if you want an example of this, last year Nebraska's two best players were probably Divine Azigbo and Stanley Morgan. They didn't even get drafted. They were the two best football players on our football team, and they didn't even get drafted. So, if you want a sign of what the talent level's like in Lincoln, what Mike Riley left it as. I mean, there's your barometer right there that our two best players, hands down, first guy to ever have 1,000 yards receiving in a season in Nebraska football history, those guys didn't even get drafted. That's the talent gap we're looking at that we're trying to correct. Now, is Frost doing a reasonable job of doing it? Yeah, but guess what? All those really, really good, really, really talented kids are freshmen. You're not going to go out and beat a bunch of juniors and seniors from Ohio State. Yes, I understand Fields is a sophomore. But that is a senior and junior heavy team in Columbus. You're not going to go beat them with a bunch of redshirt and true freshmen.
And that's what, yes, there are freshmen who dominate in college football, who have good, but they're usually surrounded by really good upperclassmen players.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Yes.
Wandale Robinson on a better Nebraska team would be off the charts good. Mo Washington on a better Nebraska team would be off the charts good. And that's the thing. It's Ohio State's an example of that. Ohio State has guys like that at that caliber, except they have it at every position, and the bulk of them are juniors and seniors.
John in North Little Rock, Arkansas. I'm telling you, they're from all over the country this week, man. He goes, I have a question for each of you. Doc, we'll start with you. Scott Frost stated on game day the following. It's not going to be very long before people are going to be worrying about us. We get a chance to prove that today. Derek Peterson of Hale Varsity countered that thought with a statement in his article on Sunday. It will, in fact, be a long time before people who matter will worry about Nebraska.
Ouch.
My question to Doc, Who's closer to the truth here?
It depends on how long we're talking
about. How long is long, right?
Yeah, how long is long? What is the meaning of the word is?
Is. You were thinking of Bill Clinton the same time. I was going to say the same thing.
Oh, that's what happens when we drink beer. You know, I think next year we become a thorn in the side to teams. But I think it's year four before we make a big step.
Year four.
Yeah.
I don't know if people will be happy with that. I mean, people are freaking the hell out on Saturday.
I know, and that's what I do. I got to be honest. I do understand it. I do understand it. I disagree with it. I think Nebraska, again, what I said earlier in the podcast, I think Nebraska is going to finish. I still think they've got a very likely shot to finish the season with 7 or 8 wins. And when you look back to 4-8 last year, that is a massive jump. That is a huge, huge improvement. And that's it's progress. This isn't going to happen overnight. And I think if Nebraska by year three can be that 9-10 win team that people look at and go, wow, these guys are going to be good in a year or two. And then by year four, year five, they're going to be really good.
So John also has a question for me. He says, Travis, you mentioned that you were Catholic and your children attended or attend Westside High School. What parish do you belong to?
Oh, wait a second. The other way.
So,
we had a little blending there.
Yeah, you blended Rob and I together. So Rob's kids go to Westside. My kids, or my daughters, went to Duchesne Academy of the Sacred Heart, and my son went to Creighton Prep High School. Rob's, who, by the way, rub it in. Come on, rub it in. Rub it in. The biggest...
That was a brutal beat down at Creighton Prep by Westside's varsity football team.
There you go. Just anything else you want to say? Friday. Yeah.
Oh, God, it was hilarious.
That's a big rivalry, though, man.
It was.
It's a huge rivalry.
We're still trying to figure out how did Creighton Prep ended up, like the high school, physically smack in the middle of District 66?
Well, I don't know. They used to be downtown, then they built out west.
And then they were like, hey, let's move right next door to Westside High School. They won't mind.
I'm trying to think, what year was District 66 founded?
I thought it was late 50s or
I think
60s.
Prep might have been there before.
It actually might have. So,
and you asked what parish I went to. My kids, we belong to St. Cecilia's. I quit that parish because I have a lot of problems with that parish. I go to Sacred Heart now, which is down in North Omaha. So
I'm Lutheran.
Yeah, Rob's Lutheran.
We eat meat on Fridays.
Yeah, I don't.
Sad.
I do, but I don't tell anybody. Tim in Vancouver, Washington.
You've got purgatory to burn on.
I do have
purgatory,
but no, don't say purgatory because the anti-Catholics will come way out of this podcast. Tim in Vancouver, Washington has a science-y question. It's right up your alley, buddy.
I might need more beer to answer this.
All right. Setting aside pure freaks of nature, is there something to mass equaling power and leverage? There is something to mass equaling power and leverage, right? How do you marry Husker power with Oregon speed without making a bunch of fast guys slow with powerful muscle? Wouldn't you have to pick one or the other on some level?
There's always a point of diminishing returns, but in general, within the scope of the human body,
yeah,
the stronger you get, the more muscle mass you add, the faster you get. So, I mean, I think the largest I got at Nebraska was just shy of 330 pounds. I was like 327, 328.
You were a big dude, man.
I was a big dude. I ran it. I think it was – so we always did electronic 40-yard dash times, which is a little bit slower than your traditional handheld time. So I would usually run like a 502 to a 506 electronic 40-yard dash, which for your traditional handheld time people, that'd be about a 485-40, weighing almost 330. And the vast majority of that was due to muscle mass and muscle strength. The stronger you are, the faster you're going to be. The more explosiveness you have, the quicker you are. And so it's not, I mean, at some point, though, there is a point of diminishing returns from a size standpoint. But as long as the size is generated by the muscle, the muscle mass that is actually performing the actual work, then you usually don't see a loss of explosiveness or speed.
There you go.
I would kind of say it basically, it's like, you know, you got a car, you know, you replace a V6 engine with a V8. Now, that's a lot of mass you're putting in with those two extra cylinders. That's a lot of extra weight you're putting in. But that's so much more power. That car is going to move a hell of a lot quicker. It's going to go from 0 to 60 a lot quicker. And its top speed is going to be a lot quicker than it would be otherwise.
All right. So I'm sitting in the house last Thursday evening, right? And it's probably about 10:30 at night. Anjanette, that's my wife, and I are just upstairs. We're just hanging out, doing nothing, having a kind of winding down the day. It's 10:30 at night, so we're getting ready to go to bed. So I check my email. All of a sudden, this email pops up at like 10:30. It's from Kathy. I'm not going to give Kathy's last name because I don't want to embarrass Kathy. But she emailed me twice within a five-minute period. Well, she actually emailed you, but people think the doctalksports@gmail.com go to you, but they actually go to that Gmail account.
It goes to the doctalksports account.
Which is something that I monitor. And I save them for you.
I don't remember you sending me Kathy.
So here's Kathy at like 10:35. And I picture Kathy because now I've got this mental picture in my head. I've never met Kathy. I don't know who Kathy is. But after reading the email, I picture Kathy listening to the podcast already with about a fifth of Jack Daniels in her. All right? This is the way I read it. Dr. Rob, you should choose someone else to do a podcast with. Someone other than that Iowa-loving Travis Justice. He always has to throw in some Iowa crap. No one in your audience wants to hear this shit. Get rid of him. Then she takes a big drag off her cigarette. I think they're like Virginia Slims 120s. And like
No filter.
And then she emails me back, or you back, or us back in like 2 minutes. Takes a sip of that Jack Daniels and says, "That's it! I'm tired of Travis, and I'm tired of Iowa. He's a know-it-all. Ugh." That's what I got.
That was the second email?
That was the second email.
Okay, let's clarify something here. That is not a Jack Daniels drinker.
You don't think so?
I'm pretty sure that's Southern Comfort.
Because it's sweet? She can't handle the real stuff?
I don't know. Either that or it's like that big plastic jug of stuff that they make whiskey sours with.
The hate mail came in this week. I think I put them on.
Which I guarantee you, I bring up Iowa far more often during the podcast than you ever do.
I walk this fine line. I really do because I have my Iowa, you know, I host the Iowa Hawkeye Call-In Show, and there are people who think.
And they all think you're a Husker.
They all think I'm a Husker guy. And I'm like, no, I'm not, but that's fine. You think what you then you have everybody here like, you Iowa fan. Well, I am an Iowa fan. I grew up an Iowa fan. I've never once hidden that fact. And I would agree that I think you bring up Iowa a lot more than I do.
It's that phenomenon because it's like the whole Iowa fans bringing up Nebraska fans living in the 1990s. More than Nebraska fans bring up the 1990s.
I love that. She says, you should choose someone else to do a podcast.
You know what, though? Do you know what I love about Kathy?
What?
Passion.
She has passion. It's passion. And she hates my guts.
Well, that's not unique.
It's really not. There's nothing special about hating me. But you're right. It is Southern Comfort in the Virginia Slims 120s. Oh. Now, it would be hard for Rob to do this podcast with someone else because we do it in my studio.
Can I fire you from your basement?
I was going to say, this was all kind of my idea. Rob and I have been broadcasting together now since, I believe, 2003.
God, at least.
Yeah. And Dave Remington likes us. Chad Carr likes us.
I think
and Fusion likes
us. I'm going to fire you. I'll get Scott Strunk, and maybe we'll get Steve Swanstrom down here. They'll be good replacement.
Hopefully. Oh, man. Steve Swanstrom is the president and CEO of Centris Federal Credit Union, and he's such a good dude. And I don't know if I've met a more passionate fan than Steve Swanstrom. I mean,
I don't know, dude. Scott was
But they're different. They're completely different fans.
I mean, Scott was openly crying with joy when Frost got hired.
But here's what's funny about Swanstrom.
I don't think his kids know it, but two of his kids actually, like, Scott, I think, actually sold two of his kids' souls to the devil in return for Frost.
I don't even have permission to be talking about a president and CEO of a credit union in town, but I'm doing it anyway. So Swanstrom's such a cool dude, is that he's from Sioux City. He went to school at the University of Iowa, and he's one of the biggest Nebraska fans I know.
Hey, my cousin Matt, we reference him on the program a lot. He's a Buckeye grad, cannot stand Ohio State. He hates it. He went to school there because it's the in-town school. It'd be like a Nebraska kid going to UNO or UNL because it's the least expensive in-state school, and it's right there.
What I think Swanstrom is kind of like us a lot, because one of his best friends, huge Iowa fan. So, I mean, it's just kind of funny that tension's good, right? It makes it fun.
I'll tell you what, this year's game's going to be interesting because guess what? Iowa, I mean, if you had to pick a winner now, I think Iowa's by far and away the better team.
I tell you what, Iowa actually is getting better week by week, and Nate Stanley impresses me. Think about it, he's made 30 consecutive starts at quarterback now. That's impressive just experience. You don't get a guy that starts – I mean, like only four of the quarterbacks in Iowa history have started that many more games.
It's hard to beat a guy with that kind of experience.
And with an offensive line like he has. Plus, you know, Alaric Jackson's coming back this week.
Yeah, I was going to say, is he back this week? I didn't see him play on Saturday. I watched a little bit.
He warmed up. He was in uniform, but he'll play against Michigan.
God, that sucks. But I think they beat Michigan.
That'd be an interesting game. I think there's a lot of interesting games coming up in the Big Ten. We did get a request, and we do take requests. Hey, it's the oldies hour. No, somebody said, hey, could you guys give a score prediction at the end of every podcast? So Northwestern coming up. We will try this once and see what happens. Score prediction for the Nebraska-Northwestern game.
31-28 Nebraska.
Ooh, a close one. Does it go down to the wire? Does it like a last-second field goal?
I think it really – last-second touchdown. I think Nebraska already has an early chip shot field goal, because if it comes down to a field goal at the end, we're screwed.
So Dr. Rob says 31-28 Nebraska – over Northwestern. He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. Make sure to follow him on Twitter at DocTalkSports. If you have questions for Dr. Rob, just keep in mind that most of the questions come to me and I read them first.
And I try to answer most stuff on Twitter. Yeah. I'll at least try and give you a quick answer.
But we do like the emails because it helps me keep things organized in a way that I can ask these questions on the air, because I don't monitor the Twitter account as much as I could for questions, but we really like them on the email as well. DocTalkSports@gmail.com. That's DocTalkSports@gmail.com. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy.